Now, let's put it into four major spheres. Number one, stratosphere. All right, let's make it bigger. Make it bigger than the atmosphere.
Okay, that's one.
Atmosphere. Now we got one sphere. We can put all the gases, all the air, the stratosphere, and all of that. Okay.
Hydrosphere.
This is all the water here. Then it takes care of all the oceans. All right, now we've got two out of the four.
I don't know the technical name, but a life sphere or a zoosphere?
Yeah, all right. Anybody else?
A biosphere.
Yeah, biosphere. Let's call it the biosphere. Okay, now we've got all life. Now we got one more to go.
Lithosphere.
Lithosphere. Yeah, litho meaning rock. Rock. Lithosphere. Lithosphere. Now, this afternoon, let's skip this one, this one, this one, and talk about this one. Now, so we'll dispose of three of the major spheres then of the Earth. The atmosphere, the hydrosphere, the biosphere, and we'll talk about the lithosphere, minerals and rocks. Now, if we start with this then, we're dealing with the solid part then of the Earth and the Earth's crust. Now, let's further limit this so that we get it down to our size, and we're going to only talk about the outer 10 miles of the Earth's crust, that is the part, the solid part of the Earth that goes down for the first 10 miles. Now, why do we talk about this? Because we know something about the outer 10 miles. Oftentimes, the material that's exposed in the central part of a mountain range may have been buried to a considerable depth, and oftentimes, 10 miles isn't an unreasonable limit. So we know something about the outer 10 miles. Furthermore, we know a lot about it from earthquakes and other kinds of information, so there are ways of knowing something about this. Now, of the rocks and minerals, they're made up in turn of what material? Rocks and minerals are made up of what? So basically what we're talking about now, the solid part of the Earth's crust, we're talking about rocks and minerals made from calcium. What do you deal with?
Atoms.
Atoms. And atoms are put together into molecules. Molecules into
crystals.
Crystals, which are
compounds,
which are made up of. We skipped one major group. Elements. Okay. Well, let's look at the common elements then. What are the common elements that are present? What is number one? The one most abundant element that you see out here in the rock pile?
Iron.
No.
Oxygen.
Oxygen? It is.
Oxygen.
What percent? What? Anybody have an idea of what percent? No. 47%. Plus or minus. All right, who's number two? Oxygen number one.
Hydrogen.
No. Let it be number two. If oxygen is one, and almost half. See, we live in a world of oxygen.
Carbon.
No. Number two. And if we have this one, we'll have 27%. For number two. No. 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 Anybody? No. Okay.
Silicon
and oxygen then, over 75%, you see, or 75% roughly. So 3/4 of the Earth's crust, of the first 10 miles, 2 hours. This is all you need to know. You see, to know 3/4 of what made up. Now let's miss the others. The next most important one. Most common. Aluminum, well, 7-8% or so. Now, so you see we dropped way off. Now we come to iron and what others now?
Sulfur.
No. We need 8 here, we have 4. We need 8, we have 4. The 8 most common elements, and when we get to the bottom of the 8, we'll have 98 plus percent of all of the Earth's crust. Iron.
Copper.
No. Carbon is way down the list. I'm way down the bottom. Hydrogen is way down at the bottom of the list. Way down. It's real common. Potassium. Not sulfur. Sure, you need that all along. Magnesium. Now. Calcium. One more. Same size atom as the calcium atom. Sodium. Okay, now we have 98 plus percent. Of all the materials, of all of the elements, of all the materials in the Earth's crust, of all the minerals, and all the rocks. So, you see, we only need to know 8 of these to know really almost everything about the most common materials. Now, let's look at what the most common minerals are. And the rock-forming minerals of the igneous rocks. We start out with the igneous rocks first, since these are the primary rocks. These are the rocks that are formed first from a molten material as you melt the outer part of the Earth's crust. And the most common rock you would get would be granite. Now, the most common minerals of the most common rock. The number one most important mineral in the Earth's crust, since it would be the number one in the granite, would be which mineral?
Silicon.
No, silicon is an element. Now we want to get to minerals, where we put elements together to form common minerals. So you see, we'll use these in combination now, these materials here. Simply combined. Okay, there's the number one, it's feldspar. Feldspar, what's next? Let's look at our graph. Here is what we're talking about. Here's the rock. This is graph. Now, the feldspar would be the white, for the most part. Now, if there's also, there's a black mineral in here, or maybe two black minerals. Any idea of these would be? You know the name of it? Amphibole, the common name is hornblende. That's one of the black ones. Yeah, another black one in here might be another material. It could either be black or white colored. And another common mineral, feldspar, amphibole, we need 4. Mica, and the mica can either be muscovite mica, which is white, or biotite mica, which is black, and it can occur in either form of the granite. So, now, one more mineral that we have to have, or we can't call this a granite. Quartz. Alright, now let's take a look at what elements we have consumed in these particular minerals. So let's take feldspars first. And what elements now are going to be in Bell's parts? We'll just list them. We won't write formulas, but we'll just list elements. And we'll list them by their symbol. All of you know the symbols for these. You've all had chemistry. All of you have chemistry? Okay, oxygen. Silicon. What else in Bell's parts? Aluminum. Oxygen, silicon, aluminum. What's this?
Potassium.
What's this?
Sodium.
Potassium, sodium. So we've got oxygen, silicon, aluminum, potassium, and sodium. And in some of the foul spars, we can also have calcium. Okay. Now, this is the most abundant mineral. Actually, this makes up 70% of the granites. So this is really a major mineral, one of the major minerals to know. Now, let's look at the pyroxene. Amphiboles, micas, olivines, quartz. Now, these are what we speak of as the common rock forming minerals. These are the common minerals that form the common igneous rocks. Now, we have mentioned an amphibole earlier, which was hornblende here. And a common pyroxene is augite. Now, let's talk about one more rock, just a minute, before we go into this little exercise. Here's a dark-colored rock, which is different from this. Both are coarse crystal. One is dark-colored, one is light-colored. One is heavy, one is light, relatively speaking. Take the same volumetric measure. So this one has heavy minerals in it. This one generally has light minerals. The light-colored rocks have light minerals, the dark-colored rocks have dark minerals and heavier minerals. The basic ingredients of the heavy minerals would tend to be on which, relate to which elements?
Iron,
calcium, yes. These tend to be the things that are in this kind of rock. This is called, in contrast to a granite, it has the same texture, would be called what? This is a granite, this is a... If you know these two, then you know the ends of the rainbow, you see, and this kind of thing. And all the other igneous rocks have to be between these two. One at each end. This is the granitic, acid-rich, silica-rich rock. This is the rock rich in iron and magnesium. And the common name is what?
Is it hematite?
No. Now, this is a mineral of iron. Hematite would be a mineral of iron. This is gabbro. Another name that you know for it. Let me show it to you in another form, in a name that you probably do know. Now, the only difference between these two is that one is coarse crystalline, the other is real, fine crystalline and dense. Now, what do you call a gabbro that's dense? It has very fine crystals. So fine you can't see them with your naked eye. Crypto-crystalline, hidden crystalline. Call this, right, a basalt. This is a basalt. B-A-S-A-L-T, basalt. Any of you live in Washington?
Yes.
You all came in past the Grand Coulee or someplace, or came in even from Seattle. Anyway, you came in to get to Chelan. You had to cross over miles and miles of this stuff. Basalt. The Columbia Plateau, 200,000 square miles of this, and 2,000 to 3,000 feet thick. Just figure out how much of it there is in the state of Washington. Basalt. and it's just defining crystalline variety of gabbro. So, now let's go back to our minerals, and then we'll get back to the basic rocks. Now, in the paroxenes, what are we going to have? Right? Aluminum? No, not very much aluminum. But we're going to have? No. Not much sodium.
Calcium.
Iron. Calcium.
Iron. And magnesium.
Magnesium. And we'll put down a little aluminum. But you see, this is too basic a material to have very much aluminum. In other words, aluminum isn't a heavy enough metal to be in these metals. Now, in amphiboles, no, you wouldn't know this, so let's put down oxygen, silicon. Here we have iron and magnesium, particularly, and some calcium, and again, a little aluminum. These are the common things. Now, what are the common things in micas? Anybody know? The common elements that are in the micas. Micas are very common. You all are familiar with what the micas look like, I'm sure. When you see them separately, these are crystals of mica. You know, this is the light mica, this is the dark. The only difference between the dark and the light is that you might suspect that there would be something in here, iron, low iron. And that's where there isn't any iron. But otherwise, they're the same kinds of materials. Okay? Now, in the micas then, common elements, oxygen, silicon. Now, yeah, we mentioned the iron, it would be over here. But the most important is going to be potassium and sodium and aluminum and a little iron. And here, maybe just a little iron. This is the main material. Now, I'll leave, anybody know this? Is this a friend of anyone's? No, no friends here. All right, this is oxygen, silicon, magnesium, and iron, and that's all. None of these other lighter metals in there at all. Not even calcium. Oxygen, silicon, magnesium, and iron. Now, how about our friend quartz? What's it? He has a nice crystal. What's in it? What do you have? Oxygen? Silicon. What's the formula for quartz?
SiO2.
Silicon 1, oxygen 2. So we put 2 oxygen and silicon together, we have this crystal. That's it. He found this in the rock pile, he said. Over here, this is a beautiful series of crystals of quartz. Every crystal, has its own particular physical properties because why? Why does SiO2 have?
Because the molecules line up in that way.
Yeah, and because they're always the same, it has a definite chemical composition, and therefore, if it has a definite chemical composition, it would have physical properties, it would be the same. So it doesn't make any difference where you find a quartz crystal, whether it's in Cascades or Texas. It looks the same. It's exactly the same. There's no difference in Texas. No. Something's off.
They're too big.
Not quartz. Well, now what we want to do is see what happens to a granite under certain conditions. Granite forms where? Where is granite being formed, if it's being formed?
In the first quart.
Down, well down within the earth, where the molten material, which comes up to high temperatures and high pressures, can crystallize under high temperature and high pressure. This means that it has to be buried under considerable depth in the rock. Rock is a very good insulator, you know. Just a little bit of rock will contain a lot of heat and it doesn't get out easily. But granite forms down deep. Now, if you were to form granite deep within the earth, and then you pushed up a mountain range where the planet becomes exposed to the atmosphere, such as it is exposed right down the road here, or up the road, either way you go, either you can find granite exposed or exposed here on this rock pile. Now, if granite is exposed at ordinary temperatures and ordinary pressures, what's going to happen to the minerals that make up?
It'll be weathered.
It'll be weathered, and by this you mean what?
Different temperatures, but when they combine with sand, we track and break.
Yeah, this is a rock that's formed, and the minerals have been formed under high energy conditions, and the minerals, the atoms, are very closely packed and very tightly packed because of this pressure and temperature. Now, if you bring it out of these high pressures and release the pressure, and you bring it out of the high temperatures and bring it into ordinary temperatures, in fact, bring it out of where you can get snow and ice, instead of being thousands, up in the thousands of degrees hot when it is formed. This is going to have quite a strain on the rock itself. Furthermore, you bring it into the presence of water, which is a great solvent. And so we bring it into the presence of the hydrosphere. See? So when you get the lithosphere in contact with the hydrosphere, and particularly now, if you remember this principle, that rocks and minerals are stable in the environment in which they form. See, if you just think this through, they're stable in the environment in which they form. So the feldspar, the mica, the amphibole, and so on, the thin gear, is going to be a stable mineral so long as you keep them way down within the Earth's crust and keep the pressure on, keep the heat on, and they're going to be very stable. But when you bring them out of that atmosphere or out of that environment into a new environment, then they're going to be unstable. So, the more contrast there is from the environment in which they form and the environment in which you look at them, the more tendency there is for them to break down. So, what happens then is that these crystals, the elements in these crystals, become vulnerable to the materials and to the new elements that they're in contact with in the atmosphere. See, where this formed, they weren't in contact with water. And they weren't in contact with air, as we know it. And they were under much higher pressure. So now let's look at these elements and see what would happen to a feldspar if you took the pressure off and the heat off and you put it in water. Just think about this. Now, what would happen to these elements? Which ones of these elements are vulnerable to things of the atmosphere and water? Oxygen. Well? What would happen to calcium, sodium, and potassium? Tend to do what? Tend to combine or react with them? And? The first thing that would happen to the crystal, here's a nice crystal with feldspar. Harder than steel, scratch your knife, and yet you put this out in the atmosphere, and the elements that are in here, the potassium and the sodium, particularly in this one, would tend to dissolve. It's a solution. Water is a great solvent. This is the first thing that happens. It begins to dissolve. Now, if it were to dissolve this material, let's just put a circle around it. This is soluble. And in the presence of groundwater, in the presence of water, this becomes the material and it goes into solution. This material here. Now, what do we have left over? We have aluminum and silicon and oxygen. Now, if we add to what's left over, if we take those ingredients and add what?
Water.
And add water, then we have hydrous aluminum silicate. Do you have any idea what hydrous aluminum silicate is? Hydrous aluminum silicate.
Isn't that Gill limestone or not?
Iron Star metal?
Mica.
It's what?
Mica.
Mica? Yeah. Well, let's look at the mica. Okay, here's mica. Mica is oxygen, silicate, potassium, sodium, aluminum. Now, what if we got the mica in the same rock, so let's look at the mica at the same time. What goes out in the mica?
Potassium.
Sodium. The aluminum, the iron, which tend to stay. Now, what do we have here? Aluminum, silicon, oxygen, and if we add water, plus a little iron, we have hydrous aluminum silicate again. What is this material that we're forming? Now, you imagine this, let's look at a piece. Here's a piece of granite that I picked up just out here on the road. Now, look at this. See, I can break this off with my hand. See, I can crumble. This is granite. This is the Rock of Ages that you see advertised. And this is what happens to it when it's exposed to the weather. What's happening here? The feldspars are changing to hydrous aluminum silicate. And the micas are changing to hydrous aluminum silicate. What if this process goes on long enough that this really falls apart? Look, here, this is rock of ages. You can grind it up in your hand, powder. This is what's happening in the atmosphere to this rock, granite, the most common igneous rock on the surface of the earth, and the atmosphere is attacking it. Somebody give me a name for it. Very common name. This. I'll say plus H2O equals.
Salt.
Well, what's it? Is this going to be a sedimentary material? Is this a material that's forming in the present environment? Yes, it is. There's the granite we just looked at. Now, the most common sedimentary rock.
Shale.
Orange.
Shale.
Clay. 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 Just plain old clay. Clay. All of you come from areas and you've got it on the bottom of your shoes. See when you came in here, probably. Clay. See the most common material that you have. Farm for the most common mineral. All right, what's going to happen to the mica? If we add what? H2O equals?
Clay.
Clay. All right, well, let's look at this. The peroxide. What's going on? Calcium. Magnesium. So now we have iron, very little aluminum, but what aluminum is here will be an aluminum silicate with some iron, and you see we're going to have clay that's iron color. See? Rusty looking clay. Brown, red clay. Some of you came through the West where you saw lots of red beds. Well, it's the type of thing that you need red beds, you see. So here again, we have clay, plus some other things. You see, you might get an excess of iron here because there's lots of iron in this. You might get hematite. See, somebody mentioned hematite. This is a source for hematite and iron ores and so on. And cobalt. Well, we can go through this pretty fast now, and you can see that you get the same thing again. And here we have clay. What does the olivine give us? Doesn't give us clay because we have no aluminum, and you have to have aluminum in order to form clay. So there's no aluminum here, so if the magnesium goes out, then here we have a source for iron again, which is a source for iron ore, and all the iron that's present in the Earth's environment, and there's lots of it here, about 5 to 6% of the entire Earth's crust made up of iron. And the quartz is very vulnerable, or is not vulnerable to weathering. So what happens to our friend granite now? This piece that you have in your hand, the feldspars break down the clay. The micas break down the clay. The amphibole break down the clay. So the granite forms basically clay. But what happens to the quartz? And I said we had to have quartz in order to call it granite. What happens to the quartz?
It doesn't change.
Doesn't change. So when you release the quartz by simply letting the rest of it go to clay, what do you have left?
Quartz crystals.
Quartz crystals, which are, what's another way of thinking of a quartz crystal? Now, they wouldn't be very big, would it? In the end. What would you form out of? Sand. Here's where we get the sand for the sandstone. So all along the beach, where you go swimming, the granite gives you quartz crystals, tiny ones. We say they come out of the granite, and they're simply free. So what does the water do now? Well, the water transports these materials from up here, and we go up into the Cascades, the rocks are rock, we say. Well, actually, they're breaking down, like this rock right here. The clays are washed away. This is how a big canyon like this gets developed in part. Because weathering can break these things down chemically, then the water simply washes them away. The sand is separated from the clay, and the material then begins to form. And the quartz then now, nothing's going to be added to this. This is simply going to be sand. All right, where did we get limestone? What is limestone? First place. What is the chemical composition of limestone?
Calcium carbonate.
Carbonate. Yeah. Now we've got carbon, haven't we? Where are we going to get the carbon? We've got sources for calcium. See, we don't have any problem finding calcium. Here's the calcium. And we have calcium here. And we have other sources of calcium. Particularly here and here and here, you see. So we've got lots of calcium. Now, if we bring this into the atmosphere,
carbon dioxide.
And every drop of rain that comes through the atmosphere carries with it a little carbon dioxide. And you get a little acid, you see, by adding the carbon to the water. And so, the carbon plus the calcium then, CaCO3, or calcium carbonate. And this is limestone, and here's where it comes from, these basic minerals you see right here. And this then accounts for, so we can simply take this out here and form limestone. So these are the basic, the common, igneous or common sedimentary rocks. Now clay, the equivalent of this would be shale. And the most common rock of the sedimentary rocks is shale, obviously. The next most common would be sandstone, and the next most common would be limestone. So shale, sandstone, limestone. Now, let's carry this concept one step farther. Now we have all of these materials at the Earth's surface under ordinary atmospheric temperatures and ordinary pressure, just like it's right here, see, down the Gulf of Mexico, Pacific Coast, so on. Ordinary temperatures and pressures. Now, what if we accumulate these in great thicknesses in the Gulf of Mexico, for example, where lots of this material, all material goes down the Mississippi River is being accumulated, and it's going down, and it keeps filling in. Now, if we can keep piling this stuff up in certain places until it's depressed, clear down in the Earth's crust, so we'll go down, down, down. And you know what happens when you go down in the mine up here, 100 feet?
Heats up.
Temperature goes up. It goes up about a degree for 100 feet to go down. And so if you keep pushing this stuff down, pretty soon it gets down to where it begins to come into high temperature again. And if the Earth is dynamic and changing, as we see evidence of the mountains that are formed here, then the squeezing pressure that comes against these soft rocks then begins to fold them and to uplift them and squeeze them and depress them into the Earth to where they get back under high temperature and under high pressure again. Now, let's not go so far as to liquefy them, but let's just go far enough to recrystallize them. Now, what if we take the clay that's here and squeeze it? What common crystals are going to form? Here, I just brought in one little piece in here. But what are the common, what would you expect would form? What would, did we break down to get it? What? Minerals, mica, feldspar, and so on. So the things that produce clay to begin with, if you put them back under high pressure and under high temperature, they're going to recrystallize and they're going to form these minerals again. See? Providing you have the ingredients to put in with them, you see, that you took out. See? So you have to add these back in a way. But these are the common things that are going to form. So now when you bring them back, you see you deposit these beds in with water surrounding them. In the Gulf of Mexico, the sediments are completely saturated with water, groundwater. And this water contains the calcium and the potassium and the sodium and so on. So that this is incorporated with these sediments. And then when you squeeze them and begin to recrystallize them, the clays take on the potassium and the sodium, and they start to form again. And the microcrystals begin to form, for example. And so we get what we call the metamorphic rocks. See, the changed rocks. And these are changed by heat and pressure, again, in this mountain building movement. And we have a whole series now of new rocks and minerals. And this has the same minerals in it as what igneous rock. This is a gneiss. And it has light minerals in it, and dark minerals in it. But they're simply lined up in a different way. It's the same thing as this. Why do you get the minerals lined up differently?
Because they settled.
Settled?
It was a sedimentary rock, and then the minerals recrystallized after it had been a sedimentary rock.
Well, this is part of the answer. The other part of it is, this rock, the crystals are simply oriented in all directions. They crystallize out. This is like the candy on the back of the stone, you see. The grains form in all directions. No preferential direction. But if you apply pressure to this rock and you squeeze it this way with a shearing force, the minerals that have direction, you see, like micas, which form flat, plate minerals, they're not going to grow against the pressure. They're going to grow with it. So this is the thing that really determines these streaks, this foliation, so-called, is that the pressures allow for the minerals to line up and form the second time, and they form this way. Then they can line up. And just like people, you see, they grow in the direction of least resistance. See, this is just natural. And the minerals do exactly the same thing. They simply grow in the direction that the pressure is least and form along this way. And this produces the banding. And in the case of a schist, it's called a schist, providing the crystals are formed and aligned in such a way that they split. The rock splits very easily. And this, you see, splits in one direction. I just brought a little piece. But this breaks about equally in one way and another. Sometimes it will split along one of these bands, but generally it doesn't do too well. What's a slate? All of you know about slates. But we don't see many slate blackboards anymore. But really, a slate is the same thing, only the crystals are so fine that you can't see them, but you still get the same splitting character. And so the metamorphic rocks tend to split certain ones of them. But now we come to another sedimentary rock that doesn't split. Now these then form nice schists and slates. What does sand? The metamorphic or the change equivalent of sandstone would be what? Here it is. Would any of you know what the change to equivalent of this is? Any of you come from Sioux Falls in Wisconsin? Red Mountain? Baraboo? No, I didn't mind. Sandstone changes to crystallized. You see, we started out with what? Making the sand. Quartz crystal, right? Released from granite. Now, if you put the pressure back on them, they crystallize, they're going to form more perfect quartz crystals. And we'll call the rock height. All you have to do is add height to the end of it. Quartzite. Quartzite. So this is quartzite. This is one of the most common rocks that you see around this particular area. It's quartzite. Here's a piece you can pick up all over the lot. Here. Why? Because the beds in which meets this ore body lies, and all the tailings, that is not all the tailings, but where they drove drifts through and tunnels through to get to the ore body, they dug through a lot of this quartzite. And they also dug through another kind of material which is related to limestone. So this is quartzite. Now, what does the limestone become?
It doesn't become marble.
Marble. Marble. And there's a lot of marble around here. Don't take any of it, but all of the material that the word holding is spelled out of in the cross out here by the chapel is made from pieces of marble about this size. I didn't pick this out. But you can find a lot of it. You can find it right out here. Marble. How do you tell marble from quartz? Any of you know just a simple way to tell marble from quartz?
It's not as clear as quartz.
Now, sometimes it is, though. Sometimes you can't tell by the color.
The texture.
No, because a lot of quartz and marble won't look very much alike. What's a very common test?
Well, quartz is just a great one.
No.
Marble breaks easier, of course.
Marble breaks easier. How about the hardness?
It's brittle.
Well, that's another characteristic. How about the hardness? Relative to your pocket knife or your fingernail file.
If you carve it, you're brittle.
Oh, so it's softer than steel. Quartz is harder than steel. Have you tried your quartz crystal on your fine knife? Try it. It'll scratch the blade of your knife. Don't try to cut it. But marble, you can cut with your knife blade. Quartz is harder than your knife blade. So if you just remember this one way of telling the difference between marble and quartz. So this is a thing. Well, now you see what we've done. An hour, less than 50 minutes. You see, college professors wind up and unwind at the end of 50 minutes. Well, this is about what it is. During this 50 minutes, we started out, you see, with the common elements, and we put them together, the common into the common rock, the most common rock, and then looked at the most common rock-forming minerals of the igneous rock. Then we brought these igneous rocks up to where they were in the ordinary atmospheric environment, where the molten rocks, you see, are in a new environment. And then from this, we allowed water to attack them. We allowed carbon dioxide in the air to attack them. Oxidation, hydration, carbonation. These common chemical reactions go on every day, right here where we are. Now, then we broke down the common igneous rocks, gabbro and basalt and granite. And we formed structures. In other words, these are the residual, the insoluble chemical materials. And we put the soluble materials into the water. And when you do this, when you take a tea kettle full of water and put it on the back of the stove and you boil it until it's all boiled away, what do you have on the inside? You have the calcium, the potassium, and the sodium, you see, forms a crust in the inside. So in many places, this material goes to the sea in the form of dissolved minerals. And these minerals then are often taken by plants and animals, particularly, to make their shells. So that the oyster shell is the calcium from the mineral, pyroxene and amphibole. It has been released, carried down to the sea, and then they use up this material. So we get shell limestone. And we get limestone that's full of shells. And we get common rocks like dolomite, which take up some of the magnesium and put it with the carbon. So we get a common rock that many of you may be familiar with, dolomite. And salt. Where does the salt come from? This is a tiny amount. You see the sodium unites with the chloride. So the sodium chloride. See? This goes to the sea. And this tends to stay in the sea unless you get an iron in the sea cut off. And then it has to evaporate. That's just like Great Salt Lake, you see. If you go to Salt Lake City, here it is. It's out on the surface. And here's the salt of Great Salt Lake. And so that you get salt accumulations in the Michigan Basin and in Kansas, Salina, Kansas. 200-300 feet thick. You go down to southern Louisiana and Great Salt floods come rising up through the sediments. And so this is where these materials come from. Then if you put these materials back under pressure and temperature involved in Mountain Deli Wood. And perhaps next time we should talk about the origin of mountains. So now we have the materials to work with. Now we'll talk about what happens to them when they get accumulated in great thicknesses and get depressed and heated up and they form these other kinds of rocks, the metamorphic rocks. Quartzite, marbles, schists, gneisses, this kind of thing, which are the common materials that we have out here. And this is the common kinds of rock that you find here, that you're working with and have a chance to look at every day. And I would hope that we would get to become friends, you see, with the rocks as well as the people around here, so that when you leave here, you will know a quartzite and a marble, you see, and you have a kind of a speaking acquaintance with the earth that you live on and are going to live the rest of your life. And when you go from one place to the other, just kind of nice to know this added bit of information. Makes your stay more enjoyable where we are. Thank you very much. You've been very patient. And I think for the day's work that you did, you stayed awake remarkably well.
Thank you.
Now,
what's, is hematite, is that kind of a green black?
Hematite is brownish red. Hematite is, yes, it's always a reddish brown color and always has a reddish brown streak. It's a perfect base for rouge and barn paper.
What is the chemical composition of taconite?
Taconite is a poor grade of hematite, a poor grade of iron. No, taconite is really a kind of a commercial term. And are you from Minnesota? And taconite is becoming very important for the reason that you see the first iron that was mined in the Iron Ranges of Minnesota had a concentration of iron between 60 and 70% pure iron, Fe, the element. And the rest was oxygen. Now, they've worked out all of the good hematite, which is a wonderful source of iron, and really played a very important part for developing the economy. But we've used this. Now they're down to where, instead of having 60 to 70%, about the best they can get is 50 to 60% of iron. And this is relatively low-grade hematite. And then where the hematite is associated with silica, and they call it jasper, jasperlite, you know, where you have layers of silica and layers of this hematite, specular hematite. If it's magnetic, you see, then they can concentrate this, although it's only in percentage, only about 35 to 40% iron. The rest of it is silica. And silica is objectionable because it's hard, you know, the quartz I just mentioned is harder than steel. So it's hard to crush down, it's hard to work, and hard to get out of the iron to make it usable. So what they have done is to crush this material and use very powerful magnets to go pick up and concentrate the low-grade iron ore, and they upgrade it, see, so they make it a 60 to 70% by using very strong magnets. And then they go through a process of making pellets out of it, and then they ship it on across Lake Superior to the iron purchase. No, it's the silica. It's the silica. And the silica is the objectionable material because it's so hard. And the Iron Ranges had the benefit of nature having done all this for man before he began to take it. The Iron Ranges had the silica in the iron, and nature, through hot water, simply dissolved the silica. It left the iron and the oxygen. So it left an iron oxide, which is hematite. And then it was soft, so you could scoop it up. Remember? So you could just literally go into the bulldozers and scoop it up. And it's 60 to 70% iron. Because the silica had been removed. Now, we're having to do what nature had already done. We're having to remove the silica. And this is the packing process. And we're down to where our iron is costing us more because we have to pay to get the silica. We've used up the good iron oxide.
What's that, the salt made out of?
The salt is made out of the same thing as gabbro, and we could just as well list the gabbro or the salt. Now, the common minerals, again, are amphibole and pyroxene. And the black mica. And some feldspar, the feldspars would be rich in calcium. So you see, we get a different treat, and never any quartz. Never any quartz, because all of the silica is taken up to make up these more basic minerals. There isn't any true quartz. So that's basically the difference between the basalts and the gabbros and the granites. The granites have to have three silica. And then we get the intermediate rocks in between, where there's just enough silica to make up all the light minerals, but not enough to make up any quartz. And so quartz becomes a key mineral in these igneous rocks. Well, no. I'd like to stay as long as you are, but I don't want to wear you out the first day. Should we have another session tomorrow?
Sure.
Yes.
Same time? Yes. Same place? Yes. We'll talk about John.
Okay.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Okay.